This meeting of the House Judiciary Committee will now come to order. The time is now 1:01 p.m. on Monday, February 2nd, 2026. We are meeting in the Groomberg Room, Capitol Room 120. The following members are present: Representative Underwood, Representative Eichheit, Representative Vance, Representative Costello, Representative Mina, and myself, Representative Gray, Chair. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. I would like to recognize the staff supporting this meeting: Sophia Tinney from House Records, Kyla Tupo from the Juno LIO, and Dylan Hitchcock Lopez, my committee aide. We have two items of business on today's agenda. First up, we have House Bill 81, Access to Marijuana Conviction Records, from Representative Nelson and his staff, Donna Page. This is their first hearing. And then we have House Bill 4, Presidential Write-In Votes, with Representative Stadler and his staff, Dolores Neal. This is also that bill's first hearing in this committee. For our first item, we'll start with House Bill 81, Access to Marijuana Conviction Records. Please, Representative David Nelson and your staff, Donna Page, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Gray and the House Judiciary Committee. For the record, I am David Nelson, representative for House District 18, which encompasses Jaybear, East Anchorage, and Government Hill. I'm glad to have the opportunity today to discuss with you House Bill 81, an act restricting the release of certain records of convictions and providing for an effective date. The bill is really an important step in providing an opportunity for people with low-level marijuana convictions, possession convictions, on the record to make a more significant impact to the state. Hardworking Alaskans are facing barriers to employment, housing, licensing, and volunteering opportunities, leaving them less able to contribute fully to their communities. According to an NCSL report, as of 2023, 28 states have legislation that applies specifically to record confidentiality of certain marijuana-related offenses. In a time when Alaska is struggling to find enough qualified workers to fill job openings, we should not be excluding individuals based on the actions that are no longer illegal. House Bill 81 would make certain marijuana possessions convictions confidential on basic background checks, while keeping those convictions available for government agencies and qualified people. Individuals who are 21 years of age or older at the time of the crime, possessed 1 ounce or less of marijuana, and were not convicted of any other crime in the same incident, would be able to request the Department of Public Safety make those crimes on their record confidential. This does not expunge, nor does it remove, the crime from the records. The Department of Public Safety would have until January 1st, 2028, to edit their database and amend their records as outlined in the bill. The Alaska court system in May 2023 amended the court view rules to make convictions outlined in this bill not visible to public view. If it is the will of this committee, I will turn over to my staff, Donna Fox Page, to review the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. It is the will of the committee.
Thank you, Chair Gray and members of the committee. For the record, Donna Fox Page, staff to Representative David Nelson. This is the sectional analysis for version I of HB 81. Section 1 amends Alaska Statute 1262-160, subsection B, paragraph 8, to include reference to the added subsection F in paragraph 8 to read, or criminal justice information as described in F of this section. Subsection B describes conditions around which an individual's criminal record may be released. Section 2 amends Alaska Statute 1262-160 by adding a new subsection F. Subsection F describes the conditions under which information on an individual's record cannot be released. Paragraph F requires the individual to submit a request for the agency not to release portions of their record. Section 3 repeals Alaska Statute 1262-160, subsection F, paragraph 4, on January 1st, 2028. And Section 4 establishes an effective date of January 1st, 2027.
Thank you so much, Ms. Page. I would like to note that we have some folks online who are able to answer questions. We have Lisa Purrington, Division Director of the Department of Public Safety. We have David Morgan from the Government Affairs. He's the Government Affairs Associate for the Reason Foundation. And in the room, we have Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. At this time, are there any questions from the committee for the sponsor or any of the folks online? Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Costello.
Thank you. So in the presentation of your bill, Representative Nelson, you mentioned that the individuals have to reach out to the department and ask for this to be removed. Can you talk about, had you thought about pursuing that any other way? And how does an individual know about that opportunity?
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, and for the record, Representative David Nelson, through the chair to Representative Costello. Yes, for the first 2 years, the individuals will have to reach out to DPS to get their records confidential, and then afterwards it will turn into an automatic confidentiality from there. This is mainly for individuals that are currently pursuing job opportunities or housing that are aware of this and have already been reaching out to the office previously on trying to get this this legislation passed. So they are motivated to have this already put on confidential on their records.
Thank you.
Any other questions from committee? Well, seeing no other questions, we will now take up public testimony. So I will now open public testimony for House Bill 81. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify regarding House Bill 81? Is there anyone online who would like to testify for House Bill 81? Seeing no one either in the room or online, public testimony for House Bill 81 is now closed. I would now like to set an amendment deadline for House Bill 81 for Thursday, February 5th, 2026 at 5 p.m. Please work with my committee aide to ensure that amendments are submitted on time. We will now set HB 81 aside and bring it back up on Friday. Thank you, Ms. Page and Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Our second item of business is to bring forward House Bill 4, Presidential Write-In Votes, up for its first hearing in our committee. At this time, I would like to invite the sponsor, Representative Dan Sadler, and his staff, Dolores Neal, to the witness table. Please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Representative Dan Sadler, House District 24, Chugach, Eagle River, Peters Creek, and Birchwood. It's a pleasure to be back in front of the Judiciary Committee, even if the chairs are kind of little here. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to present the bill and ask my front desk staffer to read through the sectional analysis. But briefly, as you all like to hear a brief introduction of the bills, this bill, HB 4, allows Alaskans to cast write-in votes for president and vice president just as they can for other state offices and statewide offices. That's the essence of the bill. And I'll say that generous access to the ballot is one of the bedrock principles of our democracy. Voters want and deserve to choose among the candidates that best reflect their political desires. We're an independent state, and voters here don't want their choices to be limited, as currently is happening with their choices for president are limited just by what's the name of the ballot. You may well ask, why cannot Alaskans vote president for write-in, And the answer is, it is expressly prohibited by regulations adopted and written by the Division of Election. Even though write-ins are allowed for state and federal legislative offices like U.S. Senator, U.S. Representative, and for governor and lieutenant governor. The regulations result from the passage in 2020 of Ballot Measure 2, and the regulations came out months later, so that's why. I do believe that Alaskans deserve the full liberty to vote for candidates who reflect their political views, even if they're not in the ballot. And I've noticed in doing the research for this bill that the first sentence in the section of law outlining the preparation of official ballots says, the director shall prepare all official ballots to facilitate fairness, simplicity, and clarity. And I think there's nothing more fair than to allow voters to have their own choice of who they'd like to see, who they'd like to vote for, the chief executive and the vice president. In summary, Mr. Chairman, HB 4 is a nonpartisan, no-cost, good government fix that expands ballot access, and I think strengthens democracy. Thank you for hearing my presentation. I'd like to ask Ms. Neal to read the sectional analysis, if I may.
Thank you, Chair Gray and members of the committee. For the record, this is Dolores Neal, staff to Representative Sadler, and this is a sectional analysis for House Bill 4, Version A. In Section 1, the only change in the section is on page 2, line 27, and it requires the general election ballot to offer voters the option for a write-in candidate for president and vice president. Section 2 begins on page 5 of the bill, and it provides the process in which votes should be counted, and it follows the same rules as write-ins for governor and lieutenant governor. Section 2 also clearly establishes the standard for how votes should be counted for write-in candidates, including at minimum voters must write the last name of the presidential candidate for their vote to count. Section 3 starts on page 6 and adds a new subsection to our statutes that specifies official write-in candidates must file a letter with the Division of Elections that includes the candidate's electors for the Electoral College, the name of their vice presidential running mate, and the Alaska mailing address. That concludes my sectional analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Neal. Are there any questions for the sponsor or their staff? Representative Mina and then Representative Costello.
Thank you, Chair Gray. Through the chair, I just have a few questions, and I don't know if the Division of Elections is on the line. Do they allow write-in candidates for the other federal offices, like for Congress, Senate?
Through the chair, but...
And I'll just say for the record, we have a director from the Division of Elections, Carol Beecher, online, and project manager, Division of Elections, Brian Jackson, on the line. So we have two folks from the Division of Elections available to answer questions as well. Back to you, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, Representative Mina, yes, if you look in the supporting materials on this bill file, there are write-in blanks for the U.S. Representative and U.S. Senate. Yes.
And follow up?
Yes.
Thank you for that response. Through the chair, to Ms. Beecher, I'd like to say, how does the Division of Elections track write-in candidates? Do they do them per name individually? Do they just group all write-ins together? And then is that information available for the public?
Director Beecher, can you hear us? If Director Beecher is unavailable, could we go to Brian Jackson to answer Representative Mina's question?
Okay, yes. Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you. Great.
Great. Excellent. My name is Brian Jackson. I'm the program manager for the Division of Elections. And to the chair, counting write-in votes are they're counted all together. And only if the total amount of votes for write-in is either the highest or the second highest, I believe it is. I don't have the statute in front of me, but they have to meet a certain threshold before the division will break down the actual counts for valid write-in candidates. And so we haven't met that threshold in recent years. I don't think we have since the Lisa Murkowski write-in back in 2010. But basically, they're cumulatively counted together to see if they meet that threshold. And then, and only then, would they be broken down to valid votes for those that actually submitted their name as a official write-in candidate.
Thank you. And just a follow-up to the chair, to Mr. Jackson. So is that information available to the public, whether it's just the maybe more details beyond the cumulative amount of write-in votes?
Yeah, through the chair, the division does not look at the write-in votes in a specific contest unless they meet that threshold. So therefore, only the aggregate amount collectively is provided in the results that are posted on the website.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Representative Costello.
Thank you. And that's really interesting. I didn't know that about the cumulative count. I just have a question. What if the person's last name who's a write-in actually has the same last name as somebody who's officially on the ballot? I mean, have you contemplated that? And is there has that ever happened?
I think that's for project manager Brian Jackson.
Yes. Again, this is Brian Jackson, program manager. Through the chair, I don't know the complete history, that it hasn't happened in recent history. The for a vote to be counted for write-in, the voter has to fill in the oval as well as print the name in the space provided. Typically, it's asked to be provided exactly how the candidate has filed their name with the division, and lists of valid write-in candidates are provided to the polling locations and can be provided to a voter upon their request to review the valid write-in candidates.
Follow up.
I do have a question. Thank you. Do write-in candidates have to meet the same deadlines for submitting, you know, their candidacy?
Again, this is Brian Jackson. Through the chair, no, they can have up until 5 days before the election to file their letter of intent to be a write-in candidate. So the division is updating these lists and getting them out to our poll workers as updates are made or more people file as write-in candidates. So it's quite close to the election day that they can file.
Thank you, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Sadler. I'm going to speak a little bit for the Division of Elections. Another point that has to be raised is that there is a threshold for writing candidates. That people just can't throw their hat in the ring 5 days. They must actually have registered with a letter informing the division of the presidential electors' names, vice presidential name, and the name and address of an in-state campaign manager who has to be an in-state resident. So there is some advance work that has to be done. I guess theoretically it could be done, you know, real quick, but I think that threshold is one additional bar against somebody just deciding on a wild hair basis. You know, I want to be president. I'm going to run for, you know, there is some threshold. It's not a wild west.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Thank you. And this is for the division. It is my understanding that it was an internal decision to exclude the option for a write-in on for the presidential election. And was wondering if the division has had a change of direction for the future in consideration of this bill, that highlighting that people do want to have that option to write in. And I know that the printing of the ballots happens a lot sooner than what someone may decide to file, since obviously they can 5 days ahead of time. But I was wondering, has the division come to the realization that maybe this is something that they need to change that internal policy on?
Again, this is Brian Jackson with the Division of Elections. Through the chair, it was my understanding that the previous director, in conjunction with the Department of Law, reviewed the eligibility of a write-in candidate, and statute 1525-105 says if a candidate does not appear on the primary election ballot or is not successful in advancing to the general election and wishes to be a candidate in the general election, they may file as a write-in candidate. And I'm sort of paraphrasing there, but so what they determine, they contemplate, that statute doesn't contemplate the presidential contest because we don't have presidential primaries. And that's when the regulation was drafted for this situation.
Follow up. So I'm confused. I'm quietly thinking about the fact that there's a write-in option for the other federal elections, but but not this one. And, you know, from the people's perspective, they want to have the option to write in whoever they see fit. And just trying to understand the compliance with the law for the division and also meeting the demands of the public and helping reconcile both of them, since this was an internal decision. In your opinion, does this bill help clarify that language for the department?
I can't speak on behalf of, this is Brian of the Division of Elections, through the chair, and I can't speak for the director on her behalf while she's out, but, you know, it's certainly something. You know, I'm trying to pick my words carefully here, but I think it does help in the right direction to get the presidential write-in back on the ballot. Although this, I noticed earlier that this statute 1525-105 was not amended in the bill, where it talks about, you know, if an unsuccessful candidate or someone that wasn't in the primary election wanted to be a write-in candidate, you know, maybe adding some amendment to this statute as well, I think would help clarify and make that available again.
One more follow-up. Thank you for indulging us. I know that you feel like you're probably got one hand tied behind your back without the director online. So I'm going to ask this question for the record. I do not expect you to respond to this, but I thought that the last time I heard this bill, that the director mentioned that the reason that they did not include the option for a write-in on the presidential election was because of space on the ballot. And maybe the sponsor of the bill could help refresh my memory if that's accurate. I would like something in writing, if I may, Mr. Chairman, submit to the department of the statute that you mentioned is kind of posing a challenge to the division, so that we can have a very clear direction on what it is that you're talking about.
Project Manager Jackson, did you want to comment?
Yes, Chair Gray, thank you. I certainly can't speak to what was said in previous hearings that I was not a part of, and I don't have that history. But I can say, you know, ballot space is a premium, and, you know, maybe that was mentioned in a previous, you know, like I said, I can't speak for her and I don't have the history. But this was my recollection of how the statute was interpreted when the regulation was drafted. And I was here at that time. So I guess it's not really an answer.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would address, I think, three points that relate to the discussion here. If you look in the supporting documents, the ballot for the most recent general election, I guess it's 2024, has a lot of white space at the bottom. There's no space limitation. That's one point. The second point I'll make is that the current law under 1515-030, preparation of official ballot, on page 2, lines 14 and 15, directs that in preparing the ballot, the director of the division provision shall be made for voting for write-in candidates within each section. So there is pretty clear direction that there shall be provisions. And if indeed there is a need for more space, they actually have two pages on the ballot, and ballots are prepared far in advance of the actual election day. Space and time considerations, in my view, should not be a limiting factor sufficient to justify denying access for write-in candidates.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Gray. Through the chair, and this is to Mr. Jackson, you said something related to the bill not amending or not touching AS 1525-105, and I just wanted to see clarity because I might have been mishearing. It looks like Section 3 does add an amendment related to write-ins for the presidential election. And so do you have a recommendation on language related to that statute, or does that current section address or what you were talking about earlier?
Yes, thank you, through the chair. I am certainly no legal expert, but when preparing for this, this was the statute that I recalled in my memory as to where it talks about why a candidate or a contest would receive a write-in line. And so that's statute 25105 refers to a defeated candidate in the primary or a candidate that was not listed on the primary could become a write-in candidate in the general election. And that's the only reason I brought that up is maybe that needs some clarifying language just to be cohesive with the other statutes that are being amended.
Follow up.
Through the chair to Mr. Jackson. So right now, as I'm reading it, so it does add new language on AS 1525-105. A write-in candidate running for the office of the President of the United States must file a letter with the director certifying the information required under AS 1530-26B. Would that add the clarity that you're talking about?
Thank you for that, Representative. I am certainly no legal expert, and I don't have my legal parachute team with me online today, but it looks like it might. It's in A, it still talks about, you know, if the candidate did not appear on the primary or was not successful in advancing. I guess that's what I was kind of hung up on.
Thank you, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. In relation to the conversation right now, I'm not a lawyer. We employ good, smart lawyers in legislative affairs to draft our bills, and the drafter apparently did not consider the need for that clarification or that change in 1525-105. And I would say, just generally speaking, there may be a lot of reasons why a person or persons might not run in the primary but might want to be writing candidates in the general. I don't think there's any requirement in state law that one must go through the primary in order to run in the general. Certainly, that's the normal progression, but write-ins are a bit out of the ordinary. So, as I say, and that if they don't run in the primary, that should not be a disqualification, and again, should not be justification for denying even that theoretical opportunity and the practical opportunity as well. That's a legal nuance that I appreciate Mr. Jackson raising, but I think it's something for lawyers to consider, and I think lawyers have considered it and passed it by as unnecessary.
At ease. For the record. So there's been some discussion about if somebody wanted to write in four different candidates for president, if we would need four different write-in lines. But as I pointed out, then we would need four different write-in lines for all of our races. Our ballots would become very, very long for those folks who wanted to have four different write-ins that they prefer over the listed candidates. And I think it might be... Yes, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I appreciate your discretion. I guess there is nothing to prevent a person from filling in every oval on a ballot. And I suspect, but don't know for sure, but suspect that would probably disqualify the ballot. It does, on the face of it, would not make sense for someone to vote for four different people for write-in. Just think about it. Why would they? And if they did, I think it would be defacing the ballot and disqualify them.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question for legislative legal. I know they aren't available right now.
Yeah, we're working on that.
But and maybe the sponsor has an answer to this, but I feel with the conversation that we just had with the division, I feel like the section 3, which is the governing write-ins, it's at the very bottom of the bill, 1525105. To me, just at the face value of the bill, it feels like it's not being as thorough to indicate that there should be a write-in if that section is concerning write-ins. And so I wanted clarification from Ledge Legal about this specific drafting, if they feel that it's thorough in what the division pointed out could be problematic. I want to make sure that we get this right and don't run into further loopholes on providing, you know, this access that voters would be considered, you know, a fairness issue.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for the sponsor while we wait for Ledge Legal to come online? If not, we'll go at ease until Ledge Legal is online. To join us in the meantime, Representative Sadler is going to give some thoughts.
Yeah. I appreciate it, Mr. Chair. Again, not an attorney, not expressing a legal opinion that's binding, but my understanding is Section 3, as I interpret Section 3, it is to provide some cut, some proof that the writing candidate, if they win the majority, actually can execute the responsibilities of winner of election. Other candidates that appear on the ballot have to register their campaigns with the Division of Elections and with APOC, and so we know who they are. We don't know who every write-in candidate is, and Section 3 merely says that if you want to have your votes for write-in counted, then you have to have a minimum of establishment of your campaign, which I guess is just one more filter, one more standardization. Again, I'm a little uncomfortable arguing the nuances of law. I'm not sure what the objection is, but I would point out again for the record that the clear direction of language of law right now on page 2, line 14, is provisions shall be made for voting for write-in candidates within each section. I don't know what could be clearer, and if it's necessary to make that point even more clearly for the regulation writers, then later on in the bill, it does so.
Thank you. At ease. Back on the record, we have Legislative Legal Attorney Andrew Dunmeyer online. So we'll go to Representative Vance for her question for Ledge Legal.
Thank you, Mr. Dunmeyer. The question that I have after hearing from the Division of Elections is regarding the drafting, and I just need clarification on Section 3. That's the area of statute that governs the write-in candidates specifically. Do we need a further clarification of in that section to mirror what's on page 2 that says provision shall be made for voting for write-in candidates for president and vice president, just for clarification, to make sure that the division is going to implement this as we intend?
Through the chair to Representative Vance, this is Andrew Dunmeyer from Ledge Legal. I unfortunately did not hear the testimony from the division section. This section 3 is included because of the unique situation for presidential elections in which people don't directly vote for the president or vice president. They vote for the electors in the Electoral College. So the write-in candidate for these offices must file a letter with the division that sets out the information for who those electors would be for that person.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Gray. Through the chair. And my question is similar on this topic. On I'm looking at the statute for AS 1525-105, but what I'm understanding is right now that section is specific to the different process that all other candidates running for office have to undergo to do a letter of intent. And it's because the presidential candidates have a different process. That's why we need this additional section. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Representative Mina, and again, this is Andrew Denmeyer from Ledge Legal. That is correct. And it is just a different process because of the federal constitution's establishment of the Electoral College in the way that we don't directly vote for presidents or vice presidents as we do with any other office.
Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair. And Mr. Dunmeyer, I guess I'd like to hear a real clear answer to Representative Vance's question. For the record and for posterity, is the language in Section 3 sufficient for the goal of this bill to allow writings for president and vice president, or is there more clarity necessary? And if so, what? And I'll add parenthetically that when the bill was drafted, when you drafted it, did not seem to think that was necessary, but we do want to make sure, to be sure. So the opportunity is now before you. Is there a need for clarity or not?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, for the record, again, this is Andrew Denmeyer from Ledge Legal. To my knowledge, this language is sufficient. You know, when we draft bills for any legislature, we try to truly capture their intent. That being said, as I mentioned earlier, I did not hear the division of elections testimony in this hearing. And certainly if they have any issues that they flagged, we would be certainly happy to address them and provide a new draft that puts in additional information. I would say that this statute, Section 3, references AS 1530-026B and says that the writing candidate has to provide that information. So in that existing statute, that information would be the names of the electors, the name of a candidate for vice president, because the president and vice president run together as a ticket, and then the name and mailing address of the candidate's state campaign chair, who must be a state resident. So my belief is that the current language in Section 3 of the bill is sufficient, but would certainly be willing to work with either Representative Sadler or the committee if the Division of Elections feels that there needs to be more or different information in this section.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Dunmeyer. I appreciate that. I'm with you. I don't think there's additional necessity for clarification, but now that we have Mr. Jackson on the record as well, I'll pose the same question to you. In the light of what you've heard from the attorneys and the discussion here, is it the division's position that there's ambiguity or unclarity that needs to be resolved, or is the language sufficient for your purposes to write the regulations to achieve the end of the bill?
Yes, thank you, through the chair. It's certainly something that I'll speak with the director and our Department of Law contact just to make sure that, you know, it's clear enough. And I hear what Ledge Legal is saying on the phone, that they feel like it's sufficient. I, just like others, you know, I don't want there to be any ambiguity, and, you know, we want it to be as clear as possible.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the opportunity is available to us now, Mr. Jackson. I'm not sure what more you're going to come back with.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'm certainly not going to make that decision for the director of the Division of Elections on the spot.
Representative Costello?
Oh, no, I was getting the...
Yeah. Oh. Are there any other questions for Ledge Legal, Division of Elections, or the sponsor at this moment? If not, I will open public testimony on House Bill 4. If there's anyone in the room who would like to testify on House Bill 4, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your testimony. Seeing no one, we'll look online. Seeing no one online, public testimony on House Bill 4 is now closed. Okay. I would now – oh, yes, Representative Costello.
Thank you. And I just wanted to mention that in the committee today, we heard that the address has to be of a resident. However, I think the sponsor of the bill said that it has to be an Alaska address. So I want to make that clear, because sometimes when regulations are written, they'll come back to the committee to hear the testimony. So could we clarify that so that it's clear? Mm-hmm. the intent of the sponsor.
Thank you. And I'll have to make reference through the chair, Representative Sadler. I'll have to make reference to the statute because I may have conflated Alaska candidate and Alaska resident. So address. So stand by one quick second. 1525-105. Do you have that?
I don't.
Do you have that, Mina? Representative Mina.
Oh, are you on 26?
Yeah. Thank you. Through the chair, so looking at the requirements for the presidential candidates, AS 1530-26 under subsection B3, the name, Alaska mailing address, and signature of the candidate's state campaign chair, who must be a state resident. So the campaign chair has to be a state resident, but the campaign just has to have an Alaska mailing address.
Thank you for the clarification, Representative Mina. Representative Costello, any follow-up? Are there any other questions or comments about House Bill 4 at this time? I was planning on setting an amendment deadline for this Thursday at 5 p.m., February 5th, 2026, for House Bill 4. It sounds like a couple of folks may be thinking about it. I'll also speak to the Division of Elections to please reach out to the sponsor if you have any concerns of amended language that would help you execute the intent of this bill. So I'm hoping that Brian Jackson is still online and hears that we can amend this bill, but it needs to be submitted to our office by 5 p.m. February 5th, 2026. We will now set House Bill 4 aside and bring it back up on Friday. That concludes today's business before the committee. Before we adjourn, here's a preview of our next meetings. On Wednesday, we'll have nominees for the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, Chase Berenson and Deborah Fancher. We'll hear House Bill 262, number of Superior Court judges for its first hearing from the courts. And we'll hear HB 20, prohibition of fees for paper documents, for its second hearing from Representative Sadler. On Friday, we'll hear both HB 81 and HB 4 and HB 262. So marijuana conviction records, presidential write-ins, Superior Court judges on second hearing Friday. The time is now 1:47 p.m. and this hearing of the House Judiciary Committee is adjourned.